Good morning.
Good morning, Nathaniel. How are you going?
I'm quite good, thank you. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Now, Shona, to start off with, what would you say is the social importance of these makeshift memorial sites?
I think there's a couple of different elements to temporary memorials. One is the collective element of grieving that happens after these kinds of events. So people generally feel that there's been a shift in their community, perhaps they no longer feel safe, they feel threatened or, very, I suppose, they've seen a significant change in their community in some way that has sort of shocked or upset them or, the variety of emotions that people feel after traumatic events. So there's that, and they can become quite important sites of healing for people because we know that after disasters, terrorism, these kinds of things, social connection is one of the key, factors in recovery after these kinds of events. The other side, I suppose, is the social element of these kinds of memorials is the kind of historical importance of them. They show a point in time, particularly when they're preserved, of community outpouring to whatever has occurred. So it's sort of the archivists that I've met through my research opened me up to this whole area of when we preserve memorials, you're preserving what happened from a community point of view after this particular event.
Right. And what sort of issues have relevant authorities encountered in maintaining these sites?
A number of things. One, I suppose, is they do, they kind of become quite big quite quickly, and you have areas that are public sites that might not be ideal for big groups of people to be attending and staying and spending time, particularly if they're kind of, it's on a street, it's more of a thoroughfare, whereas people do like to spend a bit of time at temporary memorials. So there's a safety aspect for particularly police and emergency services in that sense. Also, there, when people leave items at temporary memorials, there tends to be what a researcher, Erica Doss, calls a transmission of effect of emotion to these items. So the memorial itself becomes kind of quite sacred, and people the public can get quite upset when they're mishandled or not treated respectfully. So that's another issue for emergency services, for our local governments that might have to manage these memorials.
Right, and how did you go about your research for your work with the Red Cross on this?
So we were involved in some way during following the siege in Martin Place at the Link Cafe, and we provided psychosocial support there at the memorial, and it was sort of one of the first times we were quite involved as an organisation in providing support at temporary memorials. And prior to that, there hadn't really been an example of temporary memorials in Australia. So that was kind of the first time where we were like, well, this is a thing that, there isn't a lot of guidance for emergency managers in Australia about, or, is there any elsewhere? And at that time, you sort of tend to hear people in the media, politicians, emergency managers saying, oh, we've rung London or we've rung Boston, and that working in emergency services, that's not exactly, while it might be useful as a way of kind of planning out how to manage what you've got to do, it's not really helpful to on the fly have to call another country. So we started to think, is there some way we can provide some guidance and advice to people that might have to manage these things? And there was a limited amount I could do in Australia with our limited experience with it. So I did a Churchill Fellowship through the Winston Churchill Memorial Trust, and they are travelling research grants, essentially. So I went to the US, the UK, France, Germany and Norway, and looked at a variety of different experiences across those countries around temporary memorials, as well as the development of permanent memorials after disasters.
Right. Now, if you've just joined us on The Daily this morning, we're speaking with National Coordinator of Strategic Partnerships at the Australian Red Cross, Shona Whitten, about the maintenance of memorial sites which spring up following major tragedies. Now, Shona, what are some important steps that relevant authorities should take when maintaining these sites?
So So we have created some rough guidelines around providing or managing temporary memorials. And I use that word loosely because, you know, you can't really manage these things. They are kind of ephemeral and happen organically really at the time. But, they, you know, you do end up with a lot of stuff somewhere. So something has to happen with that. So our kind of advice is to allow people to access memorials, be inclusive around who can access memorials, so not to, you know, barricade them off for certain types of people or to, you know, make it only people who are directly affected or indirectly, or, you know, people who might only peripherally be affected also might need to participate, because we know that creating divisions early on in recovery can have a real impact further down the line. We encourage people to provide some kind of psychosocial support, both secular and faith-based, if that's appropriate. So that's a service that Red Cross provides after disasters, generally after natural hazard caused disasters, but also after more man-made types of events. We encourage people to plan the removal of the items, to be consultative with those that are directly impacted, to see if people, family members of those that have died, might want to keep things or not, and to really have a dialogue with the community about what might happen with the memorial once it's dismantled, and, you know, also not to, that people in the community can participate in what might happen with the memorial items, that there's a way for them to access them. So we see local libraries take on items, we see city archives take on items in some cases. So, you know, a way for people to continue to engage in the memorial if that's something that they want.
Right. And now lastly, what generally happens to the physical items which make up a makeshift memorial, like flowers, when it's mm-hmm. dismantled? What happens?
So it really depends on the circumstance and what has happened and what the items are. So quite often they're flowers, and obviously as organic matter you can't keep them. So a lot of cities or towns choose to compost them and put them on memorial gardens or some other important kind of nature area in their community. For physical items or notes and cards and letters and things like that, they are sometimes preserved in archives. So depending on the size of the town or the city, it might be the local library, or it might be the local government archives, or up into kind of bigger cities. So when I was in Boston and Paris, I visited the Paris City Archives and the Boston City Archives, and they have, along with all of their other collections of hundreds of years of maps and all sorts of important items from their communities, they have items from temporary memorials after the Boston Marathon bombing and the Paris attacks in 2015, I think it was. So, you know, they are preserved in some ways. Sometimes they're used for other ways. So in Boston, at the first anniversary, temporary memorial items made up a museum exhibition and did a bit of a roadshow throughout that part of the US. So there's a variety of things that people can do. There's no hard and fast rule, really.
Right. Well, Shauna, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thanks for having me.